Hello there. You're listening to Audacity, the Authentic Entrepreneur podcast. I'm your host, Claire Ackers. In this space, you will hear me talk about anything and everything you need to be an authentic entrepreneur so that you can not only grow a wildly successful business that gives you the wealth and freedom you dream of, but so that you can also stay true to yourself and your values and also have massive impact with your work. I'm a mum of three, serial entrepreneur, business coach, and cheerleader for those of you who have been brave and audacious enough to set up in business. So, welcome to the Audacity Podcast. I am so glad you're here, and let's dive in to the episode. Today, I am sitting down with the lovely Eleanor Snare, who's going to be telling us about their background and their story. So, Eleanor, how are you today?
Hello, I am very well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on to speak with you. I'm really looking forward to it.
I suspect we're going to have a good chat. And can I just say, I love that picture you have in your background, the where the wild things are image.
Oh, thank you. Do you know what? It's awful, this, isn't it? But it's actually my partner's, and I just get all the benefit. Everyone loves it.
I think that's fine.
it's such a fantastic image, and I think it's really... We're trying to make this wall behind me covered in pictures because I think it's, I really want to try and communicate that fun, creative, playful side. And it is just such a brilliant book and image to communicate that. So yeah, I'm glad you like it.
So for our podcast listeners, it's from the Where the Wild Things Are, and it's the image about Let the Wild Rumpus Start.
Yeah, and all climbing and swinging through the trees, which is what I try to do every day. It's like walk into the office and go, let the wild rumpus start.
Absolutely. That sounds like a fun way to live your life. So let's dive in. Tell me about you and just a bit of your background and your story and how you got to be where you are today, if you would.
Okay, absolutely. So as you said, hello, everybody. My name's Eleanor. And I describe myself as working as a bridge and a catalyst between art and business. And the way I got there is that when I was about 15, starting to choose, you know, starting in the middle of choosing GCSEs and proceeding with GCSEs and thinking about A-levels, I was really, really torn between going down a very arts-focused route with particularly fine art, or going down a much more kind of academic, I guess, route with things like history and English, which I was very strong in, but I really loved the arts. And we had this one careers lesson where our careers teacher was like, you've got to do this quiz is going to really help you, and if you would fill in all the questions, and then it would tell you what career you should have.
can I just jump in at this, because I did something similar a decade or two before yours, I suspect. But it came out that I should be a swimming pool instructor.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
there could be something in there about helping people though, and like,
yeah, some sort of metaphor about not drowning.
We'll go with that. These quizzes, right, we all do them, and we even do them now on things like BuzzFeed. We want to be told essentially what to do, but at 14 15, I was really, really struggling and finding it really difficult to kind of know my path. So I did this quiz really hoping it would tell me, and obviously I came out right down the middle. And I really struggled for many years to understand how, kind of, where I could fit in the world. Was I an artist? Was I doing creative arts and out there in the community and, you know, selling art? Or was I in the business world and the professional world using communication skills? And at different times in my life, I've essentially lent on one or the other. So I had a lot of arts education. That's when I went to university in my master's degree. But then I went to work in marketing, and I was working in a very kind of commercial, data-driven environment. And I'm now at this point where I guess I realized that I didn't have to keep them separate, and that instead of feeling like I was torn between two worlds, which a lot of people feel, right, that they are stuck in the middle between two things they love that seem really disparate, rather than being torn between two worlds, I could actually act as a bridge and bring together the best from each of them. So the intuitive, perceptive, like world-changing, emotionally resonant aspect of the arts with the resources, the structure, the process that's really important in business, and the communication of the two. So that's what I do now. And the way that I do it is I work with organizations who see the arts as a positive route to engagement, or with organizations who are willing to try that out and willing to say, right, let's experiment with the arts, with our colleagues, potentially with our customers, to actually get us talking about things that are maybe a bit more challenging, you know, through a workshop or something like that. And with individuals who are creative practitioners who want to feel more confident in the work that they're producing and have a kind of level of personal development, which I believe really you can gain a lot from the business side of that, the entrepreneurial level of personal development that entrepreneurs go through. So essentially bringing and mixing and blending those things together. But it's been a strange journey, as many people's journeys have been. And really the key was recognizing that you don't have to be torn apart by your interests. You can actually bring them together, and we need more people like that, you know, crossing the boundaries and being these kind of catalysts between different substances and different areas of life.
I think that's so interesting. And if I have a drum for all the stuff that I work with, it's authenticity, which to me, the definition of that is knowing what your values are, what you stand for, and having the courage to live that every day. And I think there's such a danger of putting people in a box, sort of saying, oh, you're an accountant, or you're a developer, or whatever, and suppressing really important parts of our personalities. You know, we see time and time again they burst out. The more that you suppress them, and the more they burst out in odd and harmful ways. So I think having a creative outlet is so important.
And most people will have one, but they would never maybe describe themselves as an artist or a creative. But it is an innate part of every person to want to express themselves and to want to express the complexity of their lives, which is really hard to do in language and can often only really be achieved through an art form, whether that is dance, music, painting, what, how you dress, you know, how you do your makeup, collage. It doesn't really matter, I think. It's that everyone does have that innate requirement to express themselves and to create and bring something into the world that is truly of who they are. And that's got really absolutely nothing to do with job title. But the various educational and social systems that we go through encourage us to believe that we are either one thing or another. But, you know, it's some of the best mathematicians I know are also the best knitters and the best musicians, because of the structure of that particular art form and the structure of mathematics and music. You know, there's so many crossovers, and a lot of creative practitioners and artists that I work with are really, really good at things like business process, or they're great, they're incredibly organized and great at spreadsheets. And then another life, they would be an office manager or a project manager, but not in this life. You know, that's, they're chosen to go on a different path. But that authenticity, I think, I was thinking about this when you sent over some questions, but I wondered if a way to phrase it, because authenticity has really been like used and abused, I think, and people think it means performing this vulnerability. And actually, I was thinking about the phrase of wholeness and authenticity being a way that, another way for us to talk about bringing our whole selves into what we do, and not avoiding or ignoring the part of us that loves, I don't know, collecting stamps or painting watercolors. You know, we're watching 30 Rock because, you know, because it's lockdown, everyone's suddenly like, I'm going to watch all these TV series that I've never watched. Like, we watch the whole of The Wire and stuff like that. We're watching 30 Rock, and the CEO character, Jack Donaghy, he wants to become like this big boy in the company, and this private investigator says, you're going to have to get rid of your cookie jar collection. And he's got this insane collection of cookie jars that he takes to shows, you know, as this kind of bit in the show. And I just thought it was so interesting, because he recognized that he wouldn't be able to be more senior if he had this weird hobby. And actually, we need people at senior level, at all levels, to be talking about our interests and our passions outside of the workplace, because that's what authenticity is being our whole self and not being afraid of it. Saying that, you know, I collect cookie jars, that doesn't preclude me from being a great leader. I don't know. Yeah, sorry, that 30 Rock thing just really stood out to me. It's like, oh, that's a really good example.
Absolutely. I've got so many questions and everything you just said, I'm not entirely sure where to start. But first point I want to make is, totally agree with you. I started watching Buffy last night with my...
Oh, wow.
I never watched it, but I started watching it with my... I started watching it with my 10-year-old, and it's nice to have a project, isn't it?
I love that show, and especially Spike, who's like the British vampire.
Yeah.
That was definitely my first kind of rumblings as a teenager. It was like, oh, I like bad boys. So embarrassing that I've said that on a podcast.
Thank you for your vulnerability there and admitting your first crush on Spike.
Do you know what? Not even my first crush. I'll tell you my first crush.
Go on.
Oh, this is really embarrassing.
Well, you said it now.
I had a massive crush on Jonathan Craig.
We watched that too. I totally see that though.
Yeah, it's the hair. I love the hair.
Yeah.
And like, also I love magic and kind of mystery and puzzles. So it was like the ideal man. And now I just think, oh, you know, he would be insufferable.
There's something in that though, because he was marrying magic with crime solving. So he's bringing his whole self.
He is.
To his windmill.
He is a bridge to that windmill. Oh, that windmill.
Anyway. So what we're talking about is connection through vulnerability, basically, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, the master of the whole subject is, of course, Brené Brown, and what she talks about that. But I think it's so, so important. How important do you find it that owners and leaders and founders of companies set the tone in being authentic, bringing their whole self to work, almost giving their teams permission to bring all their weird and wonderful and wacky individuality into the office and culture?
I just think it's kind of crucial, really, because sometimes I've described workplaces as living in the psyche of the leader.
Ooh.
And I don't think leaders realise that sometimes, that empathic people who work for you, intuitive or perceptive people who often will be in your creative team, they will pick up on everything. They will pick up on every nuance that you're experiencing. And it can be like living in your psychological experience. All of the trauma, the barriers, the worries that you have, but also all the things you value and the positives and where you believe you should invest your time and money. All of that is present, whether you like it or not. So being authentic and I think showing up with that whole self is really, really key. What I would say is that it will happen anyway, whether or not you are aware of it. So the key is not even necessarily to be authentic. It's to be aware of what you're bringing in. And there's a lot of leaders, I think, that they do like personal education, but they don't do the personal development work that's really hard, like therapy. Or like dealing with their shadow selves or dealing with their demons. They sort of do the, yes, I'll learn how to be a great leader, or yes, I'll learn management techniques, or, you know, I'll improve my knowledge of this particular trend. But actually the stuff you need to do is like, what's your relationship with your parents? How do you demonstrate care and affection? What do you struggle with? Like, what triggers you? Because that will be coming out. And people who are perceptive and who have done that work in the organization will be able to spot it. And that can be really, really tense. I've definitely felt that. And if you have any biases that are inherent in you, perhaps in the way you were raised, whether they are around sexism or homophobia or racism, which all of us have some of those to some extent, they will be present. And people will pick up on it even before you do. So there's something about, it is crucial that you bring your whole self in, but if you don't know what that whole self is, it potentially is quite damaging.
Do it responsibly.
Do it really responsibly. Know that you are gonna, you know that it triggers you when someone rebels because you weren't allowed to rebel as a kid, for example, or that the way that you know, your love language, for example, your love language is through acts of service, but your CTOs is through, I don't know, gifts or whatever, and that you're going to clash. And you don't have to go through all these like tests and rigmarole to do it. It's just having a conversation about it that says, you know, I really loved it when you did this for me. It's almost like a relationship. Well, I mean, it is a relationship, but it's almost like an intimate relationship. But having that consciousness and awareness that you are bringing in a lot of stuff, and that as the leader, it will be like amplified. So whoever the leader is, it's just like really, really loud because they're at the top. So yes, bring your whole self in, but doing it with a level of consciousness and knowing that you probably have to do more psychological work because your psyche is so present and there are so many other people like living in it. I think it's really key.
That's like Spider-Man, isn't it? With great power comes great responsibility.
Absolutely. You are Spider-Man.
So,
yes,
people listening to this and watching this are pretty much values-led, driven by authenticity. You know, they know their stuff, they're tuned onto this stuff. And I think there's going to be a few light bulbs going off in a few people's minds about some work they need to do. And I love that. So thank you for that. I'm interested to know, what kind of work do you do with organizations? Like is it creative projects? Do you get them to all draw a picture of their earliest memory? What kind of work do you bring in?
I love that. That's a great idea.
You can have that one.
Thank you. So the work that I do, what I guess encourage people to think about is that it's a bespoke process because every single organisation and person is going to be different. Mm. But there are artistic education techniques that I know and that I use in my own teaching work, which I do as well, that I bring in. So it might be that someone approaches me and they say, like, this would be really pertinent. Look, we're having to make loads of redundancies and we know that people are struggling with this emotionally. What can we do? And we might work together to create a workshop where we're having something that is about expressing emotion through art. Or it might be that we might be almost like creating a wall of respect and love through art of the people who are no longer working at the company to kind of give them a place. So that might be something. It might be that there's an individual in the team, in the creative team, who wants to be mentored, and that would be a one-on-one piece of work. So I really try and work in a bespoke way because it would be a lot easier for me to say, this is the product. But actually, the point of art is that it's a unique expression of who we are and where we are at a particular time. And therefore, the organization and I need to work together to understand what that would look like for them. Mm-hmm. But I always say, you know, it uses creative methodologies, it uses artistic processes, and it's about being sustainable in that. So ideally, you want to work on it regularly for a specific amount of time because we need follow through. We need follow through with those different ideas and that sense of psychological safety and sense of creation. And then when I'm working with individuals, it's much more on a kind of your traditional coaching or mentoring capacity, but again, using creative methodologies. Mm. So everything that I'm doing, I'm trying to think, okay, how can we do this through the field of art? Because it just allows for a level of expression of complexity that is just hard to do in language. I really think that. But I bring in a lot of things like systems thinking, systems coaching, non-violent communication into what I'm doing, which is the stuff that I'm really interested in from a kind of compassionate and sort of social perspective. But it's really about bringing an art practice into an organization to help them address a moment of change, something that's difficult, something that's happening that they need to work through. So I'm not trained as an art therapist. It would be amazing. Perhaps that would be something that I would do in the future. but it's almost like an art process for these challenges that organizations are facing, or an art process for them to reimagine what they could do. So those that are surviving probably need it to be processing some stuff. Mm-hmm. Those that are thriving or that want to thrive, it might actually be an art thing. Okay, we're going to be in 100 years. You know, what would that look like? Do a roadmap of our business. Could we actually make a map? Could we make a landscape? And what would that be like?
I love that idea.
Sort of things. Yeah. So it's about creating those. To be honest, I think this one of these things is a lot of consultants and coaches and people working with organizations to help them through change will use a lot of methodologies that have a lot of similarities because they're effective. So you might as well use them. The key for me is that we can do them in more fun and creative ways, which actually bring in that whole self. Because as soon as you put a pen in someone's hand and go, well, paint something, they stop thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And they start really feeling and intuiting and moving into a part of themselves which perhaps gets switched off if you just stay in this very intellectual space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about using effective methodologies but not being afraid to kind of play with them and have this art process within it.
How much do you rely on your instincts? Say you go in with a certain idea or a set of exercise or toolkits that you think might be appropriate, and then you sort of get into a conversation, you think, actually, this is, you know, you get a light bulb moment that this is, you need to use something else. Mm. Do you get that kind of instinctive bridge with people?
Yeah, I think that something I've really struggled with to accept personally is that I would say 90 to 100% of all the decisions I've ever made in my life, including professionally, including for clients, have been based on intuition. And the thing about intuition is, you know, the more you use it, the better it gets. And the more you educate yourself and grow and age, the stronger it can be. So when I was younger, it didn't always work. But now, because I've practiced it and really like used it like a muscle, it's really effective to the point where I have clients who say, you know what I'm thinking before I'm thinking it, which I think can be quite scary for them. But also with sort of suggesting things for people, I want them to feel like they have ownership of it. So I'm never going to say you have to do this, you know, I'm never going to say this is essential. But what I might have a conversation is I'm going to suggest this, but you seem to be resisting it, you know, what's the fear there, or what's the concern there? But there's a huge part of it which is instinctive, just as, you know, painting. There is a point where you have the structure and you have the sketchbooks and the draftsmanship, and then there's a bit where you just start painting. And if you put the paint stroke there, it's done. And there's an instinctive quality to it. So I think I think a lot of business revolves around instinct more than maybe we would like to admit. But that if we practice it and we're conscious of it and conscious of intuition, and we make the time to learn about it and listen to it, it can be really, really powerful. So I do use it a lot, but I would never use it kind of, again, with Spider-Man, I would never use it for ill. I would always want someone to they need to come on the journey with you. Like, yeah. You'll know that, right? And your listeners will know that. It's not just going in and saying, look, I know this is the right thing, and kind of slamming it down on the table. It's actually having the sort of compassion and the grace to be able to discuss with someone why you believe it is right, and if they don't, to meet somewhere around it.
Yes, I love that word, grace. You've basically just described my favorite thing about being a coach, and the absolute honor and privilege that I get from the whole process, which is for me, it's when you create a relationship and a space for somebody, and you have that kind of energy exchange with them. And for you say it's a creative idea and intuition, but for me, it's like a metaphor appears. Mm. And obviously, with that person's permission, I share that metaphor. And the amount of times that just unlocks a full cascade of insight, it's absolutely, it's magic. There's no other word for it. It's just magic, just that connection.
That. And that metaphor, I think, is so that's such an interesting way to think about the art processes, because that's really all they are.
Mm.
And you can do it in a very heavy-handed way, you know, draw a portrait of you at work and it's like da-da-da. Or you can do it in a very subtle way, in a very kind of a meaningful way that's almost quite sort of hard to untangle. One of the challenges there, it becomes also hard to explain, because, you know, sometimes if you have a metaphor that pops into your head, you might not be able to say, well, I thought of it because of X, Y, Z, and this is why it's appropriate. It just is. But yeah, I love that idea of the, it does appear. And that more, you know, the more you are doing that, the more metaphors and the greater kind of vocabulary you will have to talk about those things.
It's a real privilege. I can't describe it as anything else. Okay, then. So let's talk about following your own path. Have you ever felt pressure to go and get a normal job?
Oh, God, yeah. Who hasn't? I think that's totally yes, absolutely.
Where did that come from? Is it internal pressure? Is it other people?
No. So my, you know, I've done that. Is it Gretchen Rubin who does that? The decision-making style or the rule-following thing, where it's like you're a questioner, a rebeller. It's like all these different things about whether you follow internal rules or external rules or neither or both.
Okay.
And I will follow my internal rules.
Intuition again.
But I'm terrible at following external rules. You know, I just don't, if I don't understand why something is the way it is, I find it really hard to kind of get on board with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want the big picture. I want the vision. But I think I have definitely felt pressure in the past to get a normal job. And also, I guess it's more than that, really. As someone who is an artist and a creative practitioner, it is the pressure to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a normal job, it's actually to say, you know, stop doing that weird thing and just do something normal, like be interested in normal things. Don't be thinking about, I don't know, what the world's going to look like in this time. Don't be like drawing rainbows everywhere. Just do normal stuff. And I think everyone has felt some pressure at some point to be normal, knowing that whatever they are isn't normal. So, which is kind of ironic, really, because then if nobody feels they're normal, then does it even exist? But I've definitely felt that pressure, and that I think is just a combination of multiple things. Perhaps it was definitely my schooling, very kind of traditional school, and it valued academia over anything else. To some extent, my family, but I think their fear came from, they were afraid that going down an arts route would suddenly mean I was destitute in the gutter or in like 1920s Paris or something. Do you know what I mean? So there's just a lot of fears around art as a viable career option.
Mm-hmm.
But that often comes from people not understanding the career options that are available in a certain area. You know, you don't just become an art teacher or an artist. There's like a bazillion other things you can do and create for yourself. And then I also think more broadly and systemically, we live in an economic system where productivity is the most highly valued trait. And one of the challenges with art is that art exists for itself. It exists to be art, to express something. It doesn't exist to be sold or bought, and not necessarily in like the way we would see art, maybe in the art world, right, or the art industry, but it just exists to be. And I think that socially we've been really conditioned to think that that's not okay, that we can't just be, that we have to be doing, that we have to be producing or consuming or whatever. And so I think it was kind of a combination of those different aspects, the personal and the social and the systemic, that gave me that sort of underlying feeling that I wasn't doing it right. And that something wasn't quite, it was never explicit, but that, you know, could you just maybe get a job that was more stable or more secure or more financially lucrative or whatever. And that is a constant struggle, I think, with everyone. Anyone who works for themselves as a leader or an entrepreneur, some days you just think, oh, fuck it, I'll just go and get a normal job, thinking it will somehow be easier. No, and even though we know it will be difficult. And as someone who also works as an educator at a university, I do kind of have a proper job. You know, I do have a normal job. It just so happens that I don't do it in a normal way because that's not how I want to do things. So I think we sometimes fetishize working for ourselves and fetishize leadership and entrepreneurship, when actually for some people, the stability of being an employee is really, really crucial. That doesn't mean they can't be creative and intuitive and innovative within that role. It means that we need to worry less about what we think the role should be and more about how we can make that role our own and make it really fulfilling for who we really are.
Well, I was just about to ask you what advice you would have to somebody who's feeling trapped or like they're not living their best authentic life, but I guess you've just answered that. Is there anything else you would add to that? Someone listening to this who's feeling, yeah, I want to break free. This isn't me.
Yeah, I think there's kind of, it's really understanding what is generating that feeling. It is easy to think of it as external: our job, our relationship, our house. Oh, I want to go on holiday. Oh, I want a new house. I want a new garden. I want a new job. Because they basically are things that we, even though it feels like we can't get them easily, we can quite easily get those things. You know, if you want to go on holiday, you could probably book a ticket, I don't know, at least somewhere in the UK tomorrow. But often the sense of frustration and feeling trapped comes from something within ourselves that we are not expressing. And, you know, the reason that I first went freelance and left the corporate world, corporate marketing, was because I wanted more time. You know, that was it. And the freedom I wanted could only be achieved through having more time to myself. And it's not like I did anything special with that time. I just had it. It was mine. So sometimes I think if someone is really feeling frustrated in where they are in their life right now, it's perhaps addressing like, what is the cause of this frustration? Because it might be something very, very simple that we've yet to kind of understand as a requirement. So like, well, I'll share a story. I had a mentee who was within an organization who came to me at the sort of start of our relationship and said, look, I think I want to quit my job. And that's really hard because you're obviously employed by the organization. So you're like, okay.
Awkward.
Awkward. And I'm never going to say to someone, oh no, stay. It has to be from them. Mm. And we talked about this feeling of wanting to leave. And actually what it was that the mentee in that role wasn't doing the things they wanted to do, but there was another team that they thought they could be a really good part of. And they said, I want to move to this other team. I'm doing some of these roles anyway, but I'm like stuck in the wrong system. Move to another team. Absolutely thrived. Loved it. You know what I mean? Like, no, the change was literally a desk and I think an email signature. But it put them in a place where they suddenly felt understood and valued. They had permission to do things. They had the time and the energy to work on the stuff that they really loved doing. And I think, you know, that person might have left their job thinking it was going to solve everything, but actually it was a deeper need and a deeper kind of consideration of what is it that I really enjoy doing? Because you might be able to do it in the role that you're in. It's just nobody knows that you like doing it.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be a seismic shift.
No. So it's almost about, I think if someone is really struggling or feeling frustrated, it's about, what is it that I'm truly frustrated about? And is it myself? Is it something that I am doing that I'm crossing a boundary of my own that I need to change? And, you know, those small daily actions are really, they kind of make our lives. So if we can change those, often we can change huge, huge swathes of our experience without having to do these very dramatic, drastic things, which are frankly quite traumatic and really hard. And you will know if that's a thing that you need to do. You will know that.
That's a really important message. Thank you. And then finally, I ask everybody this, Alan. Thanks for your time and coming on this. But what, something, tell us about a book or a podcast that you couldn't live without, or has inspired you, or you just love to share so other people can love it too.
Okay, so I'm sure everyone says, oh, there's so many. But there are so many. But I found a book that was really powerful for me was a book called Women Who Run With The Wolves.
I just picked that up last night.
Yeah, it's time. It's your time, right? So it's one of those
books. I love the concept, the whole wise woman, remembering the old stories. Love it.
So that book, The Seven Stages of the Soul, I think it's called. No, Five Stories, Five Stages of the Soul. There's a Seven Something of Change. Those books are like, they call to you. So I had some of those. I had women who run on the walls with on my shelf for like 2 years before I looked at it. And it comes to you when you need it. And that book for me was really, really transformative as someone who identifies as non-binary, but previously identified as a woman. It was really important for me to understand what it is like to be, to address and acknowledge what it is like to be a woman in contemporary society, and in particular the challenges and the difficulties through this incredible medium of storytelling. And I think it's a really beautiful exploration of the life of woman and what that means. And I definitely think it helped me understand what my gender identity is more, because I was like, actually, I addressed that, and then there's something else here that kind of goes beyond that. I love that book. I think that's amazing. And the book, another book, can I say two?
Yeah.
Another one that I think is really, really powerful is Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. And that, I've done my foundation training in nonviolent communication, but my aim is to eventually become kind of fully qualified. That takes 10 years. And reading that book completely shifted how I see communication and how I see its power, because we're so used to talking about communication as this negotiation, as this kind of win-lose. You know, you've got to convince people, and there's a lot of stuff, contemporary practices, which encourage this kind of very persuasive, almost manipulative experience of communication. And that nonviolent communication is the paradigm that actually we are trying to connect. All we are trying to do is connect. And that book is a great introduction to the key tenets of it. And just to really get people thinking about how we share and how we listen. I would really recommend that for all people, really.
That's brilliant. Thank you. And I will get in touch when I've finished.
Oh, you're
the Wolves book, and we can compare notes.
Yeah.
Eleanor, how can people find you if they want to find out more about your work?
If you would like to find out more about my work, you can visit my website, which is www.eleanorsnare.com, or I would love people to connect with me on LinkedIn and Instagram. Both of them are just Eleanor Snare. It's me. I'm sure there's more of us, but I've yet to find them.
Perfect.
So yeah, connect with me on there. And I also have an email newsletter, which I will probably tell you to sign up for if you connect with me, called Outside the Lines, which is an art and business newsletter. But yeah, they're fantastic. The best places to find me.
Perfect. Well, thank you for your thoughts. It's been illuminating.
Oh, thank you. What a wonderful compliment. Thank you for having me, Claire, and for your great questions and your holding the space. It was really wonderful.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I'll speak to you soon. Thank you so much for listening. It's been great to have you here, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode. If you like what you hear and you'd like to connect, head on over to claireackers.com. And I'm most active on LinkedIn. Just search for Claire Akers. That's Claire with an I and an E. See you next time.